This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you all for coming today. It is my pleasure to speak to a group of this nature and in this place, and I feel humbled. As I think back on my 43 years of church and business leadership, I realize that God has developed the leader within me. And it's my prayer that I can teach in a way and be a facilitator of God developing the leader in all of you. It's a process, and I think it's true that we all always have more to learn, and I join you in that. We always have more to learn. What makes a leader stand out? What are the motivations and the techniques that characterize an effective and successful leader? So I invite you to think with me about that. Let's think first, what is a leader? A leader is a person who goes before like a guide or shepherd or director. So there's a need for leadership many times. John C. Maxwell said, a leader is someone who knows the way and goes the way and shows the way. Notice the nice progression. Knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way. And John Maxwell has written many books, but one of the classics is Developing the Leader Within You 2.0. This is the second edition. And so I'll just recognize that as I quote him here. And then Ezra the scribe was such a man. In Ezra 7:10, we read that Ezra had prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord and to do it and to teach in Israel statutes and judgments. And notice that significant sequence. Learn. He prepared his heart to seek the law of the Lord. Do and teach. Learn, do, and teach. Very parallel to what John C. Maxwell said, that a leader knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way. A number of years ago, I was blessed by the testimony of a man who was living in this area, and he was attending a church, and I recognized in the story that we exchanged that he was attending a church that he didn't grow up in. And I asked him, why is it that you chose to affiliate here? And he said, it's because I enjoy listening to the leaders who teach like a shepherd leading. Come on up here. There's green pasture up here. Come this way. This is the way to follow. And it blessed my heart. So a leader is one who goes before, who knows the way, goes the way, and shows the way. He goes before like a shepherd. And then we think about, what is a servant? A servant is one who performs duties for others, like a waiter or a nurse or a pastor, a secretary, attendant, administrator, and so forth. Performs duties for others. We that are in pastoral leadership are definitely part of the servant group. Mike Pence, our vice president, said, I believe in servant leadership, and the servant always asks, where am I needed most? It's inspiring to know that he thinks this way. Plato said, he who is not a good servant will not be a good master. And you know, Jesus said something like that when he said that if we're faithful in the little things, we'll be faithful in much. Thank you. I appreciate it up here. I hope that the rest can read it well. So maybe I didn't. Okay, you can. So that's scriptural. In the end, when we stand before Christ, what matters most is that we hear the words, well done, thou good and faithful servant. Enter into the joy of thy Lord. So what is a servant? One who performs duties for others, who serves another. Jesus Christ is the great example. And he said this, and I'm going to read a little more than just the verse that's in front of us here. I'm going to read a little bit ahead of that. When he called them together, he said, "You know that those who are regarded as rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be servant of all. For even the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." So in the nugget, in the center of what I read, he said, if you want to be great, serve. But he didn't just talk about servant leadership. He led it by example. And we remember this teaching and the example on the night before he was betrayed and arrested and condemned and crucified, that he said to his that he served them, his disciples, by washing their feet. And he said this unto them, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, I have set you an example that you should do as I have done to you." Jesus Christ taught it and exemplified it. So he's our great leader because he knows the way and he shows the way and he goes the way. Servant leadership calls us to give ourselves, not just our skill set. So it becomes a personal thing. It's not just serving because I'm gifted a certain way. A few years ago, I heard Javen Bender give us a topic on servant leadership to our ministers' gathering. And he said this, "Servant leadership is a call to lead by serving and a call to serve by leading." You know, I'm just blessed by this play on words. Two beautiful verbs, to lead by serving and to serve by leading. Javen Bender from Abbeville, South Carolina said this. Did I see him in the audience here today? I'm not quite sure now if I saw him. Yes, there he is in the back, next to back row. Thank you, Brother Javen, for this idea. And I'm going to play on this in the next slides here, as you'll notice that a number of them are going to be entitled to serve by leading and then also to lead by serving, or whichever order it is. Let me give you this introduction here to servant leadership. One who relies on his position, or he's a power-reliant leader, commands and controls. He's highly competitive. He seeks the personal credit for the advancements and the accomplishments. He focuses on fast results. He probably doesn't really care for a lot of committee work. He sees employees as tools. He sees customers as challenges. And life is all about his leadership. But by comparison, one who leads with a servant's heart inspires and equips others. He's highly collaborative. So the team spirit is in that workplace or in that organization. And he gives credit to others. He's good at planting ideas sometimes and then letting it take root, and then the credit goes to the one that picked up on it. And he focuses on gaining understanding. Again, sort of another way to say he's collaborative. But he focuses on understanding the objections of those in the team or those that are suggesting something. And so he learns to listen instead of just being the initiator. And a servant leader sees employees as resources rather than tools. He sees customers as valued allies, and his leadership majors in the people. It's about the people, not about the leader. And we heard this morning about Nicodemus and how his intention was to have people remember him. Now, I might say a few other things here about this type of thing. So we have the independence here and the interdependence on the servant leader side. We have the tendencies to complain about long meetings on the power reliance side. And we have, on the other side, the willingness to pursue buy-in from all, to develop consensus. And we probably all, at times, are stretched on different sides of this. Sometimes when we're in leadership, we can't believe how much time it takes. And sometimes when we're a part of the team and it isn't quite gelling for us to understand what the leader is trying to bring out or lead us towards, then we feel rushed. So you've probably all felt different sides of this kind of thing. And then the power-reliant person tends to speak first, and sometimes it's that way for youth especially. And so as we go and as we grow in these things, we learn to listen more. And some people are especially gifted in this of listening first. And then even on the matter of humor, the power-reliant leader can use humor to control others or to, you know, kind of dig at them. But the person that's a servant leader uses humor to lift them up. Or we might say that the power-reliant leader is pushing other people down while the servant leader is lifting them up, so that we're not, the one side might be the ladder climber, stepping on top of others, and the other one is building the ladder so that all can rise together. Servant leaders want to build each other up. Servant leaders have a heart for the people. Maybe there's somebody here, I've raced along here for a number of slides here, and I've meant to ask at different points, what are the things that you think of when you see these things on the screen? Are there ideas that you'd like to bring out here, any interaction, or shall we save it for the end? I'm serious, though. Somebody has something, I'll take it now. Well, then we'll continue. Best practices of servant leaders. I think of these beautiful words of Peter. I exhort the elders, shepherd the flock of God that is among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but willingly, not for shameful gain, but eagerly, not domineering over those in your charge, but being examples to the flock. Some ways, I apologize for putting the handouts in your hands at the beginning, because you know where I'm going. You can stay two steps ahead of me and so on. I'd rather, in a way, have this more like a class, so shame on me. But if this was a class and I wouldn't have this in your lap, I'd be saying, what do you see here? Well, the first thing that I'm going to point to is shepherd the flock of God. So shepherds guide and nurture members. Shepherds, well, that also includes discipline, which comes up just a bit later here. In exercising oversight, you keep an eye to present dangers. So there's some discipline involved in that. And then the future opportunities, oversight, being able to see to the horizon and just beyond. That's leadership. That's visionary. That's what needs to develop. We probably aren't all gifted in that. We're not all mature in that. Maybe we're all gifted to a certain way, but the giftedness needs to be developed. So Peter's saying that we exercise oversight, that we serve with willing enthusiasm. You know, I'm combining the ideas here, this willingness and this eagerness. And sometimes we can be so eager in our youthful ambition that it's not really wise either. But on the other hand, to serve with willing enthusiasm is right and godly. And so let's just learn to have a healthy dose of service in the enthusiasm. Let's just learn to be balanced as we take leadership and as the leadership is given to us. Serve with willing enthusiasm and not domineeringly. Put the needs of others before your own. So servant leadership, again, is looking out for the best of all and the needs of others. And then finally, lead by example. Another one of the refrains of the passage of this topic today, lead by example. A leader knows the way, he shows the way, and he goes the way, right? Now, from Romans 12, yesterday we had a message in one of the main sessions on Romans 12. A little more focus on the first two verses, but notice here, I say through the grace given to me, to everyone who's among you, not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think, but to think soberly. Pause there. Soberly, I think, means sound thinking. Sound thinking that's realizing that God has dealt with us a measure of faith. For as we have many members in one body, but all members do not have the same function. Think soberly. Contrasted with this, not thinking more highly than he ought to think. So yes, we can tend to pride, especially in the ways that we're gifted, in the strengths that we have. So God is saying through Paul here that, yes, it's good to know your giftedness. For the next verses are going to talk about giftings. It's good to know your giftedness, and it's good to serve in your giftedness. But let's have some balancing truths here. Let's think soberly, not lifting ourselves up, and also being aware that there are others in the body that are gifted complementarily, so that the group together, the group of leaders together, the body together can have a balanced serve. So here's the summary. Sound thinking, humility, and know that we're one member among many in the body of Christ. So leading by serving. So if we have the gift of perceiving and proclaiming truth, then let us be active in that and let us be comfortable in that. And if we don't, then let us learn to perceive and proclaim truth. And if we have the gift of serving or ministry, then let us be faithful in meeting the needs of our fellow congregants. And let's also serve with a clarifying of truth and being willing to be investigative in the things that need to be investigated. I served with a pastor, an uncle of mine, David L. Miller, for many years. And he's gone now. But one of the things he was the strongest on as I got to know him, and I don't know how long it took for him to develop this skill, but when somebody in the congregation came with a charge against another, he became very diligent to go check it out. He'd ask, have you checked it out? Did you go back to the source? Is this just going around circles and so on? And so he was very willing to go be that investigator, to go back and understand. Now, did you say this? And did you go back to the original source? Did you do this and so on? You know, a lot of things in the church and in the organization are misunderstood and are misquoted and so on. And so he saved a lot of trouble. So let's edify and encourage and warn others. That's the gift of encouragement, the gift of counseling, the gift of exhortation. And then share time, finances, and the gospel. the gift of giving, and the organizer is the one who leads naturally and coordinates groups well. He tends to be a visionary. And then to love with empathetic compassion, this is the gift of mercy. And it shouldn't surprise you that some of these gifts complement each other beautifully, so that one with the gift of mercy could go well with the Peter who perceives and proclaims truth. And the two, like say John and Peter, would make a good team to do some team counseling in a problem situation, because they can help each other. Maybe the Peter would be more the spokesman, at least in certain times, and the other one would, though, help to round the rough edges of the communication. And so here we have these seven giftings of Romans 12 listed here with the verbs that I like to use. And another quick list, leading by serving. We perceive people's hearts. We address sin and intercede. That's the gift of prophecy. We meet practical needs, the gift of serving. We teach God's truth systematically. That's teaching. We have the gift of exhortation to love, bless, give, lend, be kind. These are some of the verbs that come out of Matthew 5 and Jesus' teaching. To give time, energy, abilities, and love to others, the gift of giving. Distinguish major objectives and help others visualize them. This is the gift of leading or ruling. And rejoice with those that rejoice. Weep with those that weep is the gift of compassion or mercy. All of these are part of leading by serving. And if we recognize that we are gifted variously amongst us and that we aren't all alike, it helps us to understand to serve in a way that is positive for the congregation. Serving by leading. Stan Toler wrote a book, Outstanding Leadership, a little one. I got it on the Choice Book Spinner in Minneapolis, Minnesota last summer. Came back through Minnesota on the way back from Kenya, and I had about 5 or 6 hours, and I went to the spinner, started looking, and I was pleased to find about a half a dozen books on leadership in there. And I thought, wow, I just bought them up and spent 5 hours just reading. It was interesting and exciting. And then later I found out that these books really are selling well in some of these airports. And they said, one of the reps happened that I crossed into that airport. He said that Minneapolis is a leading outlet for them there. So you might find some books on leadership there that you'd like. In fact, let me just say that I also got John Maxwell's book there that day as well. So Stan Toler said, leaders not only have their eyes on the horizon, they can see just beyond it. So there's vision here. Effective leadership is people-oriented. People matter. Employees feel heard. People are empowered to grow, and employees are appreciated when we're people-oriented. Ray Kroc, you might remember, started a hamburger chain that we all know. He envisioned a successful hamburger chain with this motto: quality, service, cleanliness, and value. And he kept repeating this to his employees for the rest of his life: quality, service, cleanliness, and value. Maybe I could do better in putting together this talk today if I'd have 4 best practices and hammer. So I apologize if I didn't quite get to that level, but you see what he's doing. He's projecting a vision for the company, and he repeats, and he repeats, and he repeats. Serving by leading. So we've got vision here. We've got people underscored, and we've got casting the vision. So that's repetition and so on. Servant leadership. I'm going to get a little practical. In my experience, when we as leaders have met together for several weeks or a month or so, Maybe some things have just kind of ridden for 6 months, partly on the burner and partly pushed off. But we gather again and again, and we come up with a proposal to take to our congregation. And, you know, it's pretty well cooked. It's well done in our minds. We've looked at all the angles, and we're ready to go. And after a few tries at this, you discover that the congregation is hearing it for the first time. And you just have to pull back and say, okay, now, we proposed it, but we've got to expect there are going to be comments. So the first thing we just resolve to do is to interact with the members. You know, it can be partly public, but it's probably going to be especially private afterward. So you got your listening. Again, a servant leader's got his ears open now because they've got questions. And maybe all they need is to get the vision cast. And maybe they need time. And maybe we need to hear. Maybe we're not right, don't have it so well cooked as we thought. So we need to give people time to consider the proposal if we sense that that's there. Again, servant leadership isn't so much we got to make a decision now. It's a process of collaboration that helps keep the congregation together. And be careful to court the counsel of all, not just the one that speak first or the loudest. So, God give us wisdom to know when the time is to go ask somebody else that may be a little more the thinker in the group and listen to him. Allow their counsel to modify the proposal or delay a decision. And finally, be willing to lay the proposal down. But oftentimes, when the leadership has spent that much time on it, it's not going to just go away for us. And so, if the vision persists, we prayerfully replant and cultivate it in God's time. But there are two indispensable factors. These two indispensable factors are leadership teamwork and healthy relationships with the congregation. It is my observation that when there are church splits, it most often happens in a breakdown in the leadership teamwork. And sometimes the second reason is the leaders aren't working with the congregation, not in a servant leadership way. Those two factors I observe to be the reasons why churches split. It may not be cover every reason that a family will leave to go somewhere else, but if there is a fracture in the church, I think it's going to hark back to our leadership in one way or the other. And you can probably help me paint the pictures and tell the stories. I'll tell you one of them. We had a neighboring congregation where the leaders wanted to lead in a updating of the standards, good motivation. They wanted to probably plant some roots a little deeper in certain ways. So they worked at reworking their standards and presented it to the congregation after some careful deliberation and time. One thing they did right, they had leadership teamwork. They were meeting together. They were working. They got the first part right. But when they came to the congregation fell out of it. They felt like it was being pushed down on them. They didn't have the servant leadership figured out. And so they kind of pulled back. Oh, this congregation is unhandy. And they went back to the boardroom and they worked at it some months went time and again at it, they came back with round two. And the congregation still felt like, have you heard us? And in frustration, they resigned. You know, that's so sad. It's so sad. Jesus told a story about the good shepherd gives his life for the sheep. The hireling's the one that flees. Well-intentioned as they were, it's not biblical. It's not shepherd leadership. So I guess this isn't 1 Peter 5 per se, but it is. It's not being domineering. It's working with the church. It's working, anyhow. So two indispensable factors are leadership, teamwork, and healthy relationships in the congregation. And let me say with regard to the first one, leadership, teamwork, how can you have leadership teamwork if you're not willing to meet? And I don't know if there's anybody here that thinks that meetings are a waste of time. And if you are, I have some sympathy for you, but I will say this. How can you have teamwork if you're not going to be willing to get together? Communication and teamwork. And you know what? The devil likes to play with the leaders. If the leaders aren't getting together enough so that they know each other's motivations, their giftings, their, you know, whatever, then the devil will play around with the people and a rumor starts and a leader can just kind of start siding in with this rumor, and he's got a following over here, and this thing could just get pretty nasty. But if leaders are willing to invest in leadership, in meetings, and maybe you can overdo this, but it's a little hard to make that case when I'm getting passionate about this. Leaders that pray together for their congregation and their needs. Leaders that hear from each other on the issues of life. And you know what? There will be different perspectives that need to be blended together. If they work together like that and somebody else says something about your fellow leader, you know, you can go to bat for him. You say, I know why he says that. I understand him. And you've got leadership teamwork. Because you're a team already, right? So be willing to invest. So this kind of thing happens on the board level, or it happens wherever in business level. These principles work when we learn to be collaborative instead of we're going to rush our agenda through. And if we also are very careful about this thing about guarding our reputations and guarding our plans, our power, our authority, you know, the focus isn't right. If we rather can learn to take the servant's heart and be collaborative, God will help us to be the kind of leader. You know, we're not just going to be pussyfooting around. We're still going to have things that we believe, the visions that we propose, those kinds of things are still going to be there. We still serve by leading. We don't just lead by serving. But I'm just saying that I'm stressing this because I feel that it is so often so easy for us to just slip off on the other side because of our personal agendas and selfishness and so on. And we need to learn the techniques of servant leadership. So the process matters. And I've emphasized the two keys here to successful church life. So key behaviors of effective leaders. I'll just put another little slide that I added in here since I printed for you. But people that really are effective in life give their lives to a great cause. And so, be it the cause that Rick taught us about this morning, or be it another facet of kingdom building, we dedicate our lives to God who turns our messes into messages. We commit to continually bettering ourselves. We're learners for life. We never have arrived. We engage with people in open, mutually beneficial ways, so we're not scared of a counter idea. We're willing to have a healthy conflict of ideas. Does conflict scare you? Conflict of ideas is key here. And we offer trust to other people. You know, I refer to a book on trust entitled Trustology. It's a life-changing concept. You know, the common idea is you have to earn my trust. And there's a reason why we think that. But you know what? Very few people are really going to earn it 100%. What's really going to work in our relationships if we offer trust? That's the card that I play. That's the card you can play. You can't control the people around you any more than I can, really, in the end. And so offering people trust is key. I don't have time to say much more about that, but offer trust. Uplift others as they ascend. What a blessing it is to get these concepts of teamwork, concepts of service. So the best practices of servant leadership, I want to do just a little bit of summarizing here. A leader is a person who goes before like a guide, a shepherd or director. A servant is one who performs duties for others like a waiter, a nurse, a pastor, or secretary. From Peter we have this, that we guide and nurture members. We exercise oversight, keeping an eye to present dangers and future opportunities. We serve with willing enthusiasm. We put the needs of others before your own. We lead by example. And I want to just finish here before I ask your comments with this leading like a shepherd. Haven't referred to this book by Larry Osborne. He's got a pretty good-sized church in, San Diego. So some of the things that you read here and experiences that he have may not apply to your congregation and your leadership. But he's starting from 1 Peter 5. Shepherd the flock of God. He's got some good scriptural principles, and I recommend that book first. If you want to read more, this book on outstanding leadership that I quoted from once, and a little bigger book by John C. Maxwell on developing the leader within you are also possibilities for you, among others. And I don't know how many of you are pastors, but if you want to think about shepherding and leading as a team of pastors, I recommend this Plymouth Brethren man's work, Alexander Strouch, Meetings That Work. And our pastor's team, about 3 years ago, used that, read about 6 or 8 pages at a time for the next minister's meeting. And we got together and we reviewed together what we gleaned out of there. A lot of scriptures are quoted. It's a very scriptural book. And I recommend, if you'd like to have a little bit of a tune-up in your leadership meetings, that book as well. Now I pause to ask. And the author is Alexander Strouch. He's a Plymouth Brethren person. They're low church. They're more nonconformed than the typical. So we'd have some things in common with those people. And now I ask you, Are there things that I've said that need balance, or some questions that you'd just like to ask? I've got a few minutes. Yeah, be careful about just having your favorites that you go to. The first emphasis from my experience would be to just have an ear for what they're saying. If you have if you develop and cultivate the idea of listening, a lot of people will dare come talk to you, or certainly one of the team, and then you discuss together what this means and how we go from here. Think about it, that some people are going to need a little time to form an opinion and a response, and also think about it that some of them are going to be much more comfortable talking to you one-on-one than in the public gathering. So it's just good practice. A lot of times, when you've developed an openness with your congregation, a lot of times you're not going to have a whole lot to work with. So it depends partly on if the machinery is well-oiled or not. But just be prepared. If you've worked hard at it as a leadership team to come to a position, be prepared that the other people aren't there yet. Just don't be shocked.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.